welcome to episode number 126 of The Big Web Show. Everything web that matters. Sponsored by Thinkful and Flywheel. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and today's guest is Dan Cederholm, author of some of your favorite design and CSS books, co-founder of Dribbble, speaker, designer, extraordinaire, dad, and famous for living in a part of Massachusetts where they used to burn witches, Salem.
That's right. Hey, thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. Thank you. I got to say thank you to you for having me on again, and to 5x5 for being awesome. And
they are awesome.
Yeah. I'm thankful today.
I'm thankful too. I'm thankful that we can do this and that 5x5 manages it for me. So
that's a beautiful thing.
All I have to do is call a friend and have a chat. It's unbelievable. Do you know what people go through to have an internet radio show?
I don't, but I can only imagine it's a heck of a lot of work.
Have you seen, you know, those movies where Pinhead comes out from hell if you move the stuff in a box the wrong way? That's the kind of stuff they go through.
Oh, Hellraiser? I never watched Hellraiser.
Yeah, I was too scared.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, it came out when I was too young, and I just, you know, the Pinhead thing just...
I think I saw part of one of the movies, probably like the third or fourth sequel, and they were like ripping somebody to pieces while they were still keeping them alive somehow. like you do. So
that's the optimal way when you're...
That's what podcasting is like if you're not with 5x5. That's just all I have to say.
Man, that's the best. I think you gotta 5x5, you guys need to record that. That's the best testimonial you're gonna get.
Now, you, Simple Bits, let's look at your website and see. You've updated it. This is good. It's not.
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah.
That's great. Simplebits.com.
It's been a long time.
Don't take this the wrong way. We're both web designers, and we've spent long parts of our careers making templates for others to use. And yet, I have to ask at this point, with all the tools that are out there.
Yeah.
When I look at this, I'm thinking, did you just buy a WordPress or Tumblr theme and just change the fonts and so forth? Or did you really do it from scratch? Because I'm thinking of doing that. I'm working on a little site now. I'm actually thinking of just buying a theme and customizing it a bit, because it almost seems crazy to start doing your own responsive CSS layout from scratch. And you know what I mean? And your own...
I totally know what you mean.
This is where we are now. This is a white site with readable text.
Yeah.
When people will say, what was it like for web design in the, you know, mid 20 teens, it'll be like, we designed stuff to look like books.
Yeah.
Like responsive books.
Responsive books, yeah.
Only at the very bottom, if you go to the footer, there's a hint of a sort of textured, the style that you had in the early 2000s, which was copied by many, many people, right? You got very well known for the style that was sort of like real textures and stuff in the background that sort of made the digital thing look not digital, made it look less like something on a screen and more like something in the real world. And that look got copied a lot. And you sort of allude to it by having this little... Actually, is there even text? There is a little texture, right? A few little white dots.
If you zoom in like 2000%, you're going to see a galaxy of texture in there. But you have to really zoom in. That a little nod to the past, I think.
Yeah. And remember when we had just to make colors, do you remember like when we were limited to the web safe colors, and to make a color you wanted, you might actually make patterns where you like combined a bunch of web safe pixels next to each other.
So that yeah.
And when zoomed out to the normal user's view, it looked like a more subtle color.
It was futuristic pointillism, you know?
Yeah.
I remember that. I actually remember an article you wrote on from Macworld. I think we've talked about this before, but
Macworld. Oh my
gosh. This was back in I don't know, 2000 something.
Forgot I wrote for Macworld.
Yeah. And it was awesome. It was a great article about how to make semi-transparent background that could like go over other backgrounds just by doing like pixel on pixel or
right.
pixel on transparent pixel, pixel on like a grid kind of thing with as a GIF and before pings were even supported. So
right.
I thought that was like a really clever, you know, I've got this constraint, but I want to do something cool thing. And that's sort of
certainly the fun of the early web. Like,
yeah.
And I remember I made a whole, I really made hate. Once I figured that out, I was like, everything was like diagonal lines with transparent. So like I would have like the thing behind it might have a gradient.
Yeah.
So that it looked magical to the web. It looked like schlocky crap, but to a web user at the time, it looked like, how is that possible? The color here is the same. And the color here is like a gradient. That's not possible. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was awesome, man. You just kind of went into Gollum there for a minute. That was cool. It's true, though. I think...
faux backgrounds.
It made it intriguing enough to try to figure out, like, what is he doing there? How is he accomplishing that? And
have we lost that? Has web design lost that?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you're right. I mean, you had a good point in the beginning there about a template. You just buy a template off the shelf or create it. I actually created this one myself just because I wanted to and use Jekyll for blogging and get back to static HTML. And but at the same time, you know, for other stuff that's not my personal blog, it's probably much easier to just find something that's been tested and works in every resolution. It's difficult, right? It's difficult now.
There was a period where they started making blogging tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, not for my website. I've been hand coding this since 1995 and only babies who can't write HTML need to use something like WordPress. I really resisted all those great early tools that were wonderful.
Yeah.
Out of just cussed stupidity. And I remember the second version of A List Apart, like we had a custom CMS from Dan Benjamin, the host of 5x5.
Yeah.
And we had a custom CMS from Brian Alvey. And I remember somebody saying, you know, we should probably just use Drupal or Expression Engine, and me going, we can't do that. We're web designers and developers. People will think we're hacks if we use, right? I was like, I
totally.
People would think I don't know how to make a back end. Sorry. I don't use other people's back end tools. I sell back end custom solutions because
right.
Your problem is really custom and you need a great design team to figure it out. And now I'm like, yes, I'll use Tumblr for this and I'll buy this theme.
Right.
And I'll change the fonts.
Right.
I feel bad because I used to be the person, like one of the people deciding like how are millions of blogs going to look. And now I'm a customer.
Now you're just a customer? Wow. That's crazy. Everything's getting abstracted a little bit more, right? More and more.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I still like the tools I understand. I don't really want to learn all the new tools. And I don't like, this is the crabby old man show for sure, but I just, yeah. Rachel Andrew, have you been seeing her tweets about this? I really wanted to write an article about it. She's been talking about it. It seems like we've made our CSS much more complex. And I kind of agree. I don't mean like, don't use the Flex model. If you were a web designer, if you were a young apprentice web designer right now, what would you even read? How would you even learn your craft?
I think that's always been the concern for me with a lot of this stuff is, coming at it today, like new, fresh, like where do you begin? And I think you have to dive into tools that already exist and abstraction and stuff. And
you're a fan of SAS now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we use it on Dribbble. And it's been, you know, it's been indispensable. And I think,
aren't you glad that at the time you learned to do web design, HTML had like five tags. And basically if you could put a header on two columns and a footer underneath it, you were a CSS genius. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
What happens to the kids if you take away these tools? Do they know how to make a page?
Maybe not. Exactly. So the fundamentals are important. I think, and especially SAS is a good example of like, you really need to know CSS basics first. And otherwise, you might not understand what you're creating, and you can get into trouble. I mean, you can write bad code no matter what you're using, right?
Sure.
But if you do know the fundamentals, or if you know how to create something without the help, then you're going to use that help more efficiently. And I think SAS is great at plugging a lot of holes that CSS, in some cases should have in the specification, or it just makes life a little bit easier, especially when you're managing large style sheets, for large sites.
Well, CSS was not designed by designers. I love Hogan and Burke. They're geniuses.
Yeah.
But they weren't graphic designers they were engineers.
Totally. Like, how do we format a white paper document, that kind of thing. And not how do we construct responsive grids, which is,
it was a one column grid that was responsive by default.
Exactly.
I mean, the table layout, our fixed width table layouts were really to blame for that. The original web was totally liquid.
Yeah.
But it was unreadably liquid.
That's true. Yeah. Tables ruined the, tables allowed us to just create whatever we wanted to, I suppose. And, I've gotten back into table based design through HTML emails. And, which is like, it's crazy. It's like a throwback. You have to use tables. You can't, there's a whole bunch of, constraints on what you can and can't do because of email clients. And it's like, it's amazing to go back to that sort of,
You're the co-founder of Dribbble, and you design your own Dribbble, community emails. You don't hand that off to someone to do.
Right. Yeah, we do. So we,
you still do all your own work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're a small team. So we wear many hats, and it's fun. It keeps me on my toes, and I still enjoy coding. I still enjoy just creating things and making things. And
that's what I miss now that I have people working for me. I miss making things. And as I look at these templates, as I'm going, well, why don't I just buy these templates? Part of me is going like, you sap, you're powerless. You had it.
No, I think that's where things are heading, to be honest. I mean, I really do.
Powerlessness?
Well, I think, just more abstraction. Things are getting so complicated to meet the requirements of what people want to do on the web or in mobile or whatever. And
you mean the appiness?
Yeah, appiness and, like just resolution alone. Like SVG is something I don't know enough about. I need to learn. And it's like, it just seems like there's something we solve a problem, and then
SVG solves a lot of problems, but not the problem of photographs.
Right. Oh, totally. Yeah. For interface stuff, it's great. We're doing, like, for instance, on Dribbble, we're doing two sets of images for UI, and we so for Retina capable stuff, we serve a bigger image, and we actually SAS helps a lot with that, but that doesn't solve things completely going forward, because now we've got even higher resolution stuff comes out, and you think you have a problem solved, and then you don't. So
it made perfect sense to support the Retina image, and it looks fantastic.
Yes,
but it was a slippery slope, and now we've crossed it, and now in theory Apple and Android could come at us with 50 different resolutions, and we'll be going, yes, so I need 700 versions of every image. And that's when you get into,
exactly.
I just send the highest resolution version I can to an image processor on my server that checks what the device is and sends the appropriate. And now we're right back to the 90s,
yeah,
where we were doing browser testing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sniffing user agents. I mean, and the whole idea of standards was to simplify, simplify, simplify.
Yeah.
No, we're not, capabilities, not user agents.
Right.
Do you, is JavaScript there? Good. Do you support the DOM? Okay. That's all we needed to know.
Yeah.
Is CSS on? If it's not, here's another, here's what it looks like. If the JavaScript is off, it still works.
Yeah.
That was simple. It seemed really complicated at the time, but now I kind of hate, I love and hate now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's difficult now to be the one person handcrafting a site thing, you know, than it was 10 years ago. Because there's just so many expectations and requirements involved, and it depends on the project, of course, but for, you know, modern websites or applications, it's just getting complicated, you know.
It's now, so for example, on a project I work on, the designer is great at CSS. He's as good as anybody, but everything's in GitHub and he doesn't understand Git. So he ends up doing stuff with static files and then sending it over a fence to a developer who throws out all his code and starts over. And you know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah,
one step forward, two steps back. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the answer is learn Git, but
yeah, yeah.
This is supposed to be a happy. This is like, well, you're at peace with SAS and Git, so you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, no, I did. And I owe Rich Thornett, the Tribble co-founder, for that, because he knew far well before I did that these tools are going to help us and make us more efficient. And I'm glad I learned those things, because they're really key for they're really key for us anyway, for running the business and collaborating, basically working on a team.
So I've been busy with stuff and I haven't been able to learn those tools, and I feel, and this is why I'm feeling like, well, you use these tools at, you know, a list apart, obviously all these tools are in use. And, but what this means is I'm powerless. I feel like a client now. Could we make the logo bigger? Like, I really feel like I'm that person to help. I'm the, like, you know what I mean? Did I have to argue that I have to try to get people to listen to what I want?
Isn't there a little bit of fun in that though? Right. Like, in terms of, you don't have to worry about, you know what it should be in the end, but you don't have to worry about the details getting there.
I love that, because I've always loved big picture. So I was big picture and small hands-on tiny picture, and that was a good mix of skills. And now I'm almost exclusively big picture, which sometimes makes it harder to relate.
No, I have similar feelings as well, even though I've got my hands in some stuff that is necessary to run front end code on a website, but there's stuff is moving so quickly, and it's difficult to have the time to keep up with that. And
you've written 5 books that tell people how to do this stuff, and you feel like a fraud. So
yeah, oh totally, absolutely.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, it's like you're winging it every day.
Yeah. Like in the beginning.
Nobody knows what they're doing completely with this.
Well, we faked it.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you using SVG for your book covers? No.
No, I'm not using SVG at all. And that's something that that's big. That's something I absolutely want to learn and want to know about. And I know it'll help. It'll help building interfaces immensely, you know, just like not making multiple versions of icons and just not having to worry about,
right,
basically if another device comes out with a different resolution, well, you're done. You're all set.
So I see us all moving away from photographs, except that photographs look beautiful on these devices.
Yeah.
Look at this lift chair at J Peak Vermont on symbolbits.com. Like, you want people to see that.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
You want them to see all the detail of the snow in those tree branches. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's the photography and the typography and the content, right? Those are the important things.
We had a funny error happen the other day where I kept saying, this image isn't loading, and we're getting like a broken image. And like, I'm talking to the guy that built the page, and he's like, no, it's loading for me here. Maybe there's something cached on your end. Or, you know, we kept going over and I went, wait a minute. I'm using a MacBook Pro with a Retina screen. Are you using a Retina screen? He went, no. I said, okay, that's what's happening. The low resolution image is loading. Then when the server says, swap it for the other one. So like something loads and then it's replaced by a question mark. And it's like, you're going to have to have.
Yeah. How do you test for that? I mean, that's difficult, right? How do you know?
Well, you have to have five devices on your desk all the time.
Right, exactly. Like you wouldn't know. That's an easy blunder. I think I'm sure I've done that too. Like, you know, you create two images, maybe you misname one of them, and the device you're having to be testing on is loading the right one, but the other one's missing. That's tricky. Yeah, man.
I'm looking at a photograph that you published to illustrate your hyperstatic text blog post where you were talking about just getting back to basic tools.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's a beautiful picture of block letters like lead type.
Yeah.
But I noticed that it's blurred at the top right and bottom left. And I'm wondering if that was an artsy effect or if you were just trying to shave some bandwidth.
No, actually, you know, that's actual blur from the lens. So it was like a DSLR camera with like a crazy lens on it. And,
not Gauss. What's the name of the lens?
I don't know. It was a Nikon like zoom, you know, lens thing. And I just focused, it had like a real shallow depth of field.
It's brilliant.
So anything you focus on, like everything else is sort of blurry, but it does look like, I took it into like Instagram and put a blur thing on it.
it looks fake because of the, I mean, for most people won't even think about it, but for people who are looking for stuff like that, it looks fake because it looks like you applied an iris, like you irised Gaussian blur and that, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Do you think some young people would see this and not even happens when you use a certain lens and a depth of field on it appears, you know, like maybe they just like, oh, that's a filter. You know, they put a filter on it.
Yeah. It bums me out when I take an incredible out of every 10,000 shots I shoot, there's a good one.
Oh yeah.
And it usually involves like light on a building at a certain time of day.
Yeah.
And then it bums me out. Cause I think everyone's just going to think I did something in Lightroom. I'm like, no, that's actually the light. I didn't touch this one. I was tempted, but I just left it alone. You know?
We are like this is like the old cranky guy show, isn't it?
Totally.
Let's just embrace it.
I have a lens that I use for portraits of my daughter and cats. I don't use it very often. It's very fancy, but basically it has like an exact focal.
You have a lens for your cats.
Well, what it does, it's like wherever you place your focal depth. So like if the nose is in focus, the cheeks might be slightly out. You know what I mean? Or if the eyes.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
It's wonderful for living creatures that have souls that just, you know, the aliveness and realness of them comes across.
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what you're saying. But just to get back to that, you have a lens dedicated to your cat. I think that's what I take away from it.
I didn't know when I bought it that's what I was doing, but it's a Geiss lens, right?
Geiss, oh yeah.
And I don't carry it around town because I don't want to like, I throw my camera in my pocket and like if I don't want to break that lens, that would seriously set me back. So I have another lens that's fine. That's like a really nice Sony lens that goes from wide to zoom. It's small.
What kind of camera do you use these days? Do you find you're shooting on your phone or not?
Not at all. When I shoot on my phone, I'm very sad. I have an iPhone 5, which is a great phone. It's the perfect size for my little hand.
It is, yeah.
I don't want a bigger phone. I like if I was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Jeff Veen, I might want a bigger phone. But like for my little childlike hand, right? I'm a short person. The iPhone 5 it's perfect, right?
I agree. It was the perfect dimensions. And I have an iPhone 6 and I got used to it, but it's difficult. And I have short thumbs, so it's like, you know, it's difficult. Yeah.
No good. And it's,
I feel your pain.
And it's rounded. First it was rounded, and then they made the 4 and it was like, looked like a piece of technology from Germany in the 1930s. Not a gas chamber, but a camera. And I was like, wow, yeah, the rounded corners, the roundedness was kind of babyish and iMac-ish, and this really is great. And so they totally sold me on rectangular design, and they started removing rounded corners from everything I designed and everything. And now they're back with roundness. And I'm like, oh, come on, guys. Seriously?
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the squareness of the iPhone 5 was beneficial, especially it looked like it felt like a camera.
Yeah.
And the new one it requires a case for me anyway. It feels really weird without a case. Like it's going to slip out of my hand. You know?
I don't want a case. Like, because then again, because I have a little hand. So I've got a Sony Alpha 6000.
Oh, okay.
It's a tiny camera. It's not tiny, but it's small enough to throw in your pocket. And the lens is like a 3.5. It's like a 16 millimeter to 50 millimeter lens. And
nice. Oh, I'm looking at a picture of it now. Yeah, that's nice.
It's like, yeah, it's wide enough to get a building and...
It's a super compact mirrorless camera. It is but half the size and weight of a typical DSLR.
How did you... Wow.
Yeah.
Did you just like Google?
Yeah, I just Googled it while you were saying. I was curious. Yeah, this looks nice. So it's like it's you could fit it in your pocket, like you said.
Because I was carrying around a heavy one and I'm a little person. I don't... Like, I'm not that little. Like, I'm not like Peter Dinklage little, but, you know, I'm not big. And...
Dinklage, was he in Elf?
He's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, okay. I think he was in Elf. He was the angry lawyer.
Well, he played an angry dwarf in Steve Buscemi's movie, what is it called? Living in Oblivion.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen that.
Where Buscemi plays an independent filmmaker who's a hack and he has a dream sequence with a dwarf. This was the first time the guy was ever in a movie. And the dwarf's yelling at him, going, why do you, that is the lowest form of hack. Why do you have a dream sequence? You hire me a dwarf so people will know it's a dream sequence. I'm a dwarf. I don't dream about dwarfs. Why do you, and like, he just rips him apart. It's a great scene. And like people.
All right. I got to see this.
People couldn't get over it. It's a pretty good movie. I mean, it's from the '90s. It's Steve Buscemi. Like, how bad can it be? You know, as long as you keep Adam Sandler away from Steve Buscemi, he's really the best.
Is it as good as Elf, though? That's what.
Elf, yeah. Are you really fond of Elf? I don't want to.
I like it. I do. I like it. I like it. It's a kid's thing. My kids like it.
I liked it too, but imagine if that's how you know James Caan from Elf.
Oh, yeah. That's a little. Yeah. Right. Yeah, he's a little better than that, isn't he?
Right. Like, what if the only way you knew. What if Don Juan DeMarco was the movie that has introduced you to, the greatest actor of the 1950s? Come on. You know what I mean? Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando, right? Yeah.
Marlon Brando as this, like, obese man, like, visibly reading the lines from a prompter. Like, staggering around Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Like, having Johnny Depp on camera just to make him look even worse, by contrast. Like, he didn't, you know, he didn't look bad enough. Like this beautiful, beautiful act. He was the most like incredible. He's what every guy wanted to be in the 1950s, I would imagine.
Brando, yeah. He was very dreamy.
Yeah, like very strong and muscular and then sensitive, like tough. And then with like a little tear, like just what the ladies like, how the men like to think of themselves, what the men like.
It's what I strive to be.
Tough, but fair.
Getting there.
I think we're going to take a little Thinkful break to thank Thinkful and Flywheel. I will be right here and be right back. So here we go. Listeners, we couldn't bring you this. Well, I'm not sure what we're bringing you today, but you couldn't hear my inanity and Dan Cederholm trying to turn it into a stream of logic. If not for our sponsors, and we thank them greatly. So let's talk about them. Thinkful. Thinkful provides online design and coding classes with a heavy emphasis on one-on-one mentorship. It means you actually have a teacher who knows who you are and cares about you and works with you. That's what sets them apart from competitors. They know that access to experts helps students learn more quickly and efficiently. During the course, students meet with a personal mentor through video chat and receive ongoing feedback on their projects. They all even give students office hours with mentors, and there's an online community where you can post and receive feedback. Thinkful is where you learn to build websites and apps in pre-months with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and jQuery. That's what it's all about. It's one-on-one mentorship, as I mentioned, and you get to build a job-ready portfolio. So if you really want to get into the exciting digital design business, but you haven't had a lot of work experience, or if you've had a lot of work experience, but you can't show anything in your portfolio because maybe you just worked on bank websites that are private and secret, you can build a job-ready portfolio. There are multiple skill levels. You can come in as a designer who wants to learn code, or a front-end coder who wants to learn back-end, or a beginner who wants to be an engineer. They handle it all. For 10% off, go to www.thinkful.com/bigwebshow. That's thinkful.com/bigwebshow for 10% off Thinkful. But wait, there's more. There's also Flywheel. We couldn't be doing this show today without Flywheel. Flywheel is a premium WordPress hosting company built specifically for designers, freelancers, and creative agencies. Flywheel is a managed host, and each site is on its own server, so sites aren't fighting each other for resources. If you've ever been on a, you know, on a shared server where, let's say, Steve Jobs was suddenly giving a talk and your site wouldn't load anymore, because all the resources were going to, so they don't do that. They don't do that to their customers. They handle caching for you, which means you can stop worrying about tuning caching plugins for the highest performance. Flywheel will migrate any existing WordPress site to Flywheel within 24 hours, completely free of charge. Flywheel has easy collaboration. Each user has just one login to both their easy-to-use dashboard and all of your files. Log into the file SFTP server and you'll see all your sites in one place neatly arranged according to owner. Have access to 1,000 client sites? That's not a problem for this great organized interface. If you're a designer who does a lot of work in WordPress for your clients, here you go. All your stuff is there. And when a client calls you because they're having a problem, that's always going to be a headache, let's face it, but at least you don't have to worry, now where did I put that or who's hosting them? It's all right there. If any of this sounds great to you, here's something that'll sweeten the deal more. Flywheel is offering 20% your first year on Flywheel for any plan, only for Big Web Show listeners. So head on over to www.getflywheel.com and enter the offer code Big Web Show to take advantage of your 20% off so you can get started with Flywheel today. Again, for 20% off, that's www.getflywheel.com with the offer code Big Web Show. Thank you, sponsors. Thank you, listeners. And with no further ado, we are coming back to Mr. Dan Cederholm, where you can find Dan on simplebits.com. You can find him on dribble.com, dribble.com. Not that you need me to spell it for you. Anyone listening to the show knows about it. Very successful community, very fun community. I think last time we were on, last time we had you on, we were defending a little bit what you do at Dribbble, because I think there were some designers who were saying, you know, design isn't making something look good. It's solving a specific problem, and I don't know how to evaluate Dribbble because if I see some work on Dribbble, I don't know what client problem they were trying to solve. And
right. Yes.
Do you remember that? And we won't rehash it because that was kind of a silly way to approach Dribbble. Dribbble is a place where people who are talented at graphic design share ideas and inspire each other, and it just looks fantastic. If you haven't been to Dribbble lately, let's go there right now.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think that's the criticism's gone away a little bit, I think, hopefully, in that, you know, Dribbble shots are not going to explain an entire process and problem solving. It's
and they're not meant to.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of like, let me quickly get a sense of what this person's doing, what they're creating, what they're good at. You know, and I think it's good. It's set up really well for that. And
it's a fantastic way to find people who are good at logos, people who are good at illustration, people who are good at making interfaces that have like liveliness to them. All that stuff is important.
It is important. Exactly. It's part of the, It's part of the deal, you know, and
I always loved your work because it felt a little bit, you know, there was always that handcrafted element to it. And there were always that sort of humble quirkiness to it that made me know that a human being was behind it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Which I like on the web because I don't really like super slick stuff that looks, you know, I don't like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with like NFL graphics, but that's not my thing.
Right. I love NFL graphics.
Do you? All that bulky?
No, I'm just kidding. I haven't. No, I like, well, I appreciate all sorts of, you know, visual styles. And
oh, me too.
And that's another thing that I like about Dribbble is that it's exposed me to so many people that I wouldn't have known about before. You know, so like a lot of talent that's out there that's just waiting to be utilized. If we can provide like a platform for those people, then we're doing our job right. And so that's the fun part.
How many members do you have now?
Well, we have we're still invitation based in terms of designers being able to upload work. So it doesn't require an invitation to do that. But anyone can sign up for an account to follow and like and all that. We're just over 700,000 members, total members.
That's huge.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And you know, I think we're not trying to be huge, you know, right? It's more about building a community and a sustainable business and, you know, making sure that the people on Dribbble, you know, want to be on Dribbble for the right reasons. And and that's been a challenge, right?
How so?
Well, just, you know, community management and having this invitation process in place is great for keeping quality and real people in the community. But it also means, you know, some people might feel left out or think that it's this exclusive thing, which it's not.
And at this point with 700,000 people, how could anyone think it was that? This has just been a network that has grown through referral.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just give a ticket to someone I don't know. I'm going to give a ticket to someone I think is talented and would use it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that largely, it keeps a lot of just, you know, spam accounts or bots or, you know, things that people that aren't creating anything, right? It's not really about like level of talent. It's more like, is this person a real person or are they advertising a law firm in Minnesota or something? You know, like we see all types of accounts, you know.
Why do people do that? I get those on Instagram and Twitter and I still don't understand how anyone could do that and think it's okay. Like, how could that possibly work?
Right. I guess it must work to some extent, right? Otherwise people wouldn't just create accounts everywhere they can. It's pretty bizarre. I guess, you know, Google Juice and all that maybe, but I think, you know, having that barrier of an invitation, I think has helped us immensely, for a lot of reasons, scaling and just keeping the community a community of people, actual people creating stuff.
Do you get pressure from people who go like, I want it to be square, or, you know, I have a really tall piece and I can't showcase it in your forum. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Funny enough, not much complaint about that, to be honest. I mean, we added, pretty early on, we added attachments, which allowed you to attach files. And if the file is a, you know, a PNG, GIF, or JPEG, it'll appear as a thumbnail and you can click on it to see like this, you know, larger view, like any size you want to upload. So that's helped. That helped a lot. But yeah, I think people grasp, you know, this Dribbble shot is 400 by 300 or 800 by 600 for retina screens, but, that it's a snapshot of something and it's a teaser of something. I mean, even when you're creating, you know, your own portfolio, for instance, you're often creating a thumbnail view of that or something. What encapsulates this project visually, right? And that's kind of what you're doing when you upload the shot. You know, like what's the most interesting part of this that I could share? And then that's just a springboard to learn more about it. Either learn more about the artist or the product they're talking about, or their process in creating it. And so I think people have come around to that.
What's a typical day for you at Dribbble? What do you do?
Yeah, so I wake up and come in to work. And we have an office here in Salem, downtown Salem, Massachusetts. And three of us are here and then four of us are remote. So we're in Campfire, or Flint, actually, is our client of choice to talk remotely. But
Flint?
Flint. Yeah, it's a Campfire client, which... You know, I don't know what the shelf life of that is at this point, but it's just simple. We like Flint because it's just simple and it's got just the basics, just what we need. So we'll check in, you know, check in with the team there. My typical day is, so it could be all over the place. I could be you know, sourcing a piece of merchandise that we're going to sell or give away, or getting on the phone with somebody about a Dribbble event. Or
how many of those go on a year?
A lot. I mean, you know, we have meetups has become kind of an important thing for us and for the community. And, they happen all over the place, all over the world. It's kind of amazing. And initially it was something that just happened. We didn't do anything. We just sat back and just watched them start and appear, and we didn't have resources to help them. And over the last year or two, we have a dedicated person that handles meetup coordination, you know, on a part-time basis, but that even that alone has helped us immensely. And we have sponsors now for meetups for the year that help us with promotion and, you know, starting new meetups in new cities. And it's kind of amazing, you know. And but I don't, yeah, in terms of numbers, I'm going to misquote that. I should say it's
okay. A lot.
Yeah.
What's your favorite feature? What's your favorite new feature? What feature has surprised you
on Dribbble?
Animation, color palette. These aren't necessarily new, but what's your favorite extra feature that you didn't have at first?
Great question. That we didn't have at first. I mean, the color thing is pretty cool. We actually just rolled out an update to that, so that it's much faster and easier to find things of the same color. That was really fun. And shout out to Ian, our developer who's out in California, for spearheading that one more recently.
What I want to do is take a color scheme that I love that you've done and import it into Lightroom and apply it to a photo I've taken.
Whoa.
I don't think there's a way to do that yet. That's an Adobe problem. That's not a Dribbble problem.
That would be amazing. Yeah. So we do have, this is kind of a hidden feature, but when you're looking at a shot and you see the color palette chips there, we call them chips. Mm-hmm. They're little drop of ink icon. If you click that, you actually download that palette.
Right.
In an ACO or .ACO file. And then you could probably maybe do what you're talking about. That's fun. Color is amazing. Just the color, doing that color project, and mostly for Ian, but for all of us really involved in it, like there's so much involved in color theory, and it's like this whole world of you know, math and nature, and it's incredible.
And selling a client on something other than blue and white, or, you know, there are very safe color choices, but the most interesting ones have so much richness to them. I'm looking at one now that reminds me of my childhood.
Oh, nice.
I mean, the drawing style, Vector Mill Identity Refresh by Ryan Putnam is what I'm looking at, actually.
Oh, Ryan Putnam is amazingly talented guy.
But those, just the colors, It's like it's fall, it's Halloween, I'm 11 years old. I mean, it's amazing.
It's totally.
It's music.
It is.
It's like I'm crying and I don't know why. It's just such a beautiful thing.
It is beautiful. And then, you know, there's math involved in it too. It's crazy. Color is cool. Your question was a good one though. And I don't know why I'm struggling to think of like, what's the one thing that, I mean, I could, this is sort of not a feature, but like the meetups thing that we were talking about before has been really, surprising in a way, but like really valuable for us to talk to our members in person and just to hear about stories about people connecting or getting work from the company through Dribbble and that face to face thing is just nothing beats it.
Yes, but also you've really become a job resource for a lot of people and a hiring resource for a lot of people. You certainly didn't set out to do that, did you? That wasn't like an end game.
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all. And yeah, that's been huge, and that's become a giant piece of the business and something that we can do a lot better at. And that's, I think, one of our focuses this year is to help that process more, just be easier, get people more work, and connect people that need to hire designers better. And there's a lot of work we can do there, and that's going to be exciting because it's true. I mean, we hear it, you know, every day from someone like, well, you know, people thank us like, wow, you know, my studio brought in $800,000 from Dribbble leads this year, you know, that kind of thing. It's just sort of mind blowing. Like it's not, you know, when Rich and I started this, it was like, it was sort of selfish in that we wanted to see what people were working on, like our friends and colleagues and stuff. And, the way it's evolved into that, into a sort of a cohesive ecosystem of designers that are really talented and people that are looking for either inspiration or to hire somebody or whatever. That system that has evolved has been really, really great. And we can do a much better job at that, and we will.
By the way, I would not say selfish, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's selfish to be interested in what your friends are doing, what your colleagues are doing. I think that just shows engagement in your field. So I wouldn't even say that, but...
All right, that's good. I like that.
But you're right. But you definitely weren't... like all the best things, you weren't planning to become an emperor of the, you know, the graphic design community, but
no way. Yeah, no.
And you did because you provided something valuable that people really liked.
Yeah. And I think it starts with like something, you're right. Selfish is probably not the right word, but it starts with some, like build something you want to do or build something you want for yourself, you know, and that's going to be important because if it does succeed, that you're going to be doing this thing for a while, right? And if it's not something you're interested in, that's going to be a bummer. But if it is, then it's going to fuel that passion to keep you moving. And you know, I'm sure you could probably say the same about your career trajectory, right? Like you it didn't set out to be the mogul of web standards or web design. And yet here you are, right?
I was sharing web design because I didn't know people were going to invent Twitter.
Yeah.
So I thought that people were going to communicate all over the world and share their stuff. They were going to have to learn HTML.
Yeah.
So that's why I start.
Wow.
And then a list apart was because I loved WebMonkey and I loved High Five, but there was nothing in between. There was nothing for the hybrid designer coder. So that was a list apart. And Eric Meyer and I, like we used to, every year we would meet at South by Southwest and go, this is great, but
we want to do this more often.
what if, you know, here's South by South and it's amazing. Like there's 50 panels at once and you don't know what to choose. And that's overwhelming and awesome and wonderful. But what about the opposite?
Yeah.
What about like a one track thing? Because nobody was doing one track at the time that I know of.
That's what's amazing though. You guys didn't set out to be like we're going to create a business plan and we're going to start a event company, right? It was born out of
not at all. Yeah.
Something you wanted to see yourself happen. And I think that's the way a lot of times that's the way great things are made.
But do you ever have trouble with Like, let's say things aren't doing as well financially and you have to lay some people off or whatever. I don't, just as an example, because that happens in any business. There's up and down cycles. Do you ever feel like, wow, it isn't as much fun? Do you ever look at Dribbble and go, this was so much fun before I had to pay my mortgage with it, and now...
No, you know, I haven't hit that point. And I literally, you know, every day I'm excited about what we're doing. And there's always something new to do, you know, whether it's like ordering Dribbble yo-yos or
there you go.
Or figuring out what health plan employees or that kind of stuff's not as fun. But like we have to wear so many hats because we're a small team that it certainly is never boring and it's always exciting. And I think recently, like working with different partners we like has been fun. You know, companies that we dig, like Dropbox and Shopify and Creative Market. And so I think it's always interesting. So when it doesn't become interesting, yeah, that's the problem. Like when you wake up and like, this is just, it's a slog, you know, then that's a problem. But it hasn't gotten to that point at all with Dribbble. And I think a lot of it too is that the community really keeps us afloat. And I think when things start to seem a little stagnant with us, you know, we'll go to a meetup or something somewhere and actually talk to people that use Dribbble and we hear such positive things about it. That really helps us like get re-energized and come back and say, okay, this is who we're building this for, is like these people. And let's get back at it. And that it just helps us continue on.
Other than Dribbble, what are your favorite sites or digital things now, digital communities now?
Wow. That's a good question too. It's funny, over the last year, I've just gotten into more offline activities, you know, so like snowboarding and kayaking come to mind. Like, so I like little, finding little things like that little, not necessarily communities, but just sort of like researching that stuff online has been interesting. You know, like you see it, like you're not seeing web design by web designers or for web designers. You're seeing like just, you know, normal industries that have the same requirements that other sites do and apps that we're all excited about, but they're just, you know, they're for something else. And that's been kind of fascinating for me. You know, like there's so much room for better design that doesn't live in the app store, or you know, like it serves a purpose, like, you know, education or, you know, that kind of stuff. Like there's so many places that need help like that. It's crazy.
Where do you see that working?
How do I see it working?
No, where? Do you see, can you give me an example of a place where that's actually, you see that happening? You see that good design coming and making something that was mundane and pedestrian into something wonderful?
No, that's the problem. I think that's very rare, you know, to see that. I think there's some that just sort of squeak by and I think those are the types of things that deserve more attention and a better user experience. But you know, those are often things that don't have a large budget or that kind of thing. So, but even having a smart person to sort of steer them in the right direction. Now, getting back to like abstraction stuff we were talking about before, like, are there package tools that are actually decent and that are easy to use for people that aren't web designers? And that's sort of interesting to me too.
Going back to the top of the hour.
Yeah. Going back. Yeah, exactly. Right. Full circle. Full circle.
I have a friend. He's a fantastic photographer. He's a writer and editor. He did a whole historical thing for the civil rights movement. You know, found these great people who had been part of the movement years ago and interviewed them and everything. And he asked, and he had this idea for an app. So he naturally emailed me. And it's like, yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to make this because this is like this, you know, this would take a lot of resources to make this. And there's no money in it. And he's like, well, I thought maybe by now, like, that stuff was widgetized.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was just like, and I, you know, and I love this guy and he's so smart. And I wanted, and I was thinking, yeah, but you know, there's spell checkers, but nobody's widgetized editing.
Yeah.
Because that's something, you know, you can publish something and probably not have spelling errors in it, but you're not going to have an editor's help with the widget. And
the widget, it's not there. That's true. They're not going to solve everything for sure. It's got to start with like smart people trying to communicate something and then apply, you know, good design to that. And then you're off to the races. But, yeah.
I've been loving your Instagram feed and the walks through the snow. Like you had one the other day, just walking home to NBD, no big deal, where you looked like you were on the surface of the moon.
Yeah. I felt like I was. We've been pummeled by snow here like crazy, and which is great for like riding on it, but not good for just everyday commuting and everything. School's out all the time.
We get a two, but then it melts here in the city. Like there's just thick crust that make crossing the street a nightmare. But
yeah, you guys got hit with the same thing, right? So what is it like walking around New York after a giant snowstorm? I mean, is like are people literally like huddled in their homes, or are it's just business as usual? Or
let me start by saying that I don't own any boots.
So because you don't have to, or you don't need
them? No, I need them. I've ordered some now. My Canadian friend came to the studio wearing, I said, that's what I'm getting. Cause I was wearing cloth sneakers. So when there's ice water up to your knees, because it's like the weather keeps changing because we, you know, what we're doing to the planet. So,
right.
It's like there's a snowstorm and then there's black ice on the ground and everyone's slipping and then it starts to melt and then it starts to freeze again. So you like, it's up to your crotch. And, you know, I was like, you know, and like, it's just not good. Not good. Or like you go, well, I'm going to take an Uber today. I'm like, we live about a mile from school. I always walk my daughter to school and then I walk up to the studio so that I get like 2 miles right away in the morning. But with this weather, I've been like, I'm going to take an Uber. And Uber's great because they cancel after you wait 7 minutes. Like the driver changes their mind and cancels because the weather's bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't usually do that. Usually pretty good. But during the snowstorms, they've been, you know, I guess the drivers get in trouble, like have a problem and they can't, you know, I understand it. I mean, it, you know, they're not superhuman. It's not a digital service. It's a real world service. But so like you ride in this Uber all the way to work and think, well, I'm glad I missed most of the, you know, and it takes half an hour to go 2 miles. And you're thinking, well, at least I missed. And then you step out into ice water up to your crotch. And you're wearing cloth sneakers and you're like, why did I even bother with the Uber? I should have just... Why didn't I just lie down in a freezer and like have a wet t-shirt contest with myself? I mean, like what did I achieve here? This was $40 to get to work. What did that buy me? And you know, and then you're like, can I take off my clothes in the office? I don't know. So that's another whole thing.
Depends on who's sharing the office.
Yeah. We're not going to go into that at all. So you're still in that beautiful big wooden space.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Bricks. We're surrounded by bricks here in Salem. And, that's one of the nice things. I mean, it's a small city, but it's got, well, it's not, I mean, it's technically a city. It's not really, and it's kind of a town, but, a lot of historic buildings here. So we're lucky to have found a place that wasn't too expensive. It's plenty big for us, but it's got, you know, beams and brick and feels like you're part of the history of you know, the town, which is cool.
Why can't I find photos of it lately?
What's that?
I can't find photos of your studio. Are they on your Great Discontent interview? Where would they be?
Yeah, they're probably, actually there probably is a view on that.
No, that's you playing a banjo.
Oh, that's me playing a banjo. Okay. That's right.
And looking like you're at a funeral. You look like you're playing the banjo over your enemy's grave. You look a little bit like Sling Blade in this photo. Yes. Ryan Esfaker is a great photographer. Don't get me wrong, but
that's accurate. That's probably what I was doing.
Is that a fretless banjo?
That is a fretless banjo. Yeah, fretless.
But you're the Jaco Pastorius of banjo.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a fretless banjo is amazing. sound wise. It's difficult, but it's
I would imagine.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's a violin banjo, basically.
Yeah, it's a whole nother level, some next level stuff. But that was created like 100 years ago. The future. It's the future of music.
The future of music, indeed.
Yes.
You designed the Instapaper application icon with art direction by Jason Santa Maria. I forgot about that.
Yes, yes, yes. One of the, I guess it was maybe the second one. It's changed since then.
Yeah.
And under new ownership, I think, right, at this point.
Instapaper's under, he sold that. He sold that?
Yeah, right. I think. I may be wrong. I shouldn't say that. I don't know for sure. But I know the icon changed. But yeah, no, Jason Santa Maria was kind enough to ask me to do to the icon because he was doing some interface stuff for.
We loved working with you. There was a moment at Happy when Happy Cog was mostly freelancers like 10, 12 years ago. And it was like you, Jason Santa Maria, Liz Danzico on IAUX and me. Oh my gosh.
That was a great team.
That was great. Well, my job was to not get in the way.
No, you had the hardest job of anybody, though, in terms of dealing with the clients and
you guys.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot about like just about that stuff just by watching how you guys work together. Do you miss that? Do you miss those days? I mean, are you doing it? You're not doing any client work these days, right?
Happy Cog's doing plenty of client work, but I couldn't do an event apart, a book apart, a list apart, teach at SVA, do the big web show, and run Happy Cup. That's crazy. So, like, Greg Hoy, Joe Rinaldi are running that.
I was going to say one or two of those things at a time would be actually insane anyway.
Well, all of them have really great people that are partners working on them, so it's not me.
I think that's an admirable thing looking at your what you've created here is that you have a knack for finding the right people for the right job and the right people to help you extend your vision of what you created initially. I think that's a talent. That's difficult.
Thank you.
You know, that's difficult to do, I would imagine. I mean,
letting go of the control is difficult.
Yeah, well, that too, right.
I'll be like, this is cool. This person's totally in charge of this. I don't have to worry about this anymore. And then I'll go, why did they make that decision? I would have made a different one. So I have like a lot of deep breathing exercises and stuff that is like, because ultimately, a lot of the times their decision was the right one, right?
Right, in the end, right. And you come about, oh, I see, right. But yeah, letting go of that control, that's not easy, right? I think anybody that creates stuff and is creative that's difficult. And,
but so your solution to that is that you still keep your hand in it very much. So when I look at your stuff, no matter how many people you're working with, it always looks like you did it. Right. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Thanks. That's good to hear. Yeah. And in terms of Dribble, very much hands-on in the design and the front-end development. And, you know, I don't know. It's funny. That almost seems like the easy part of the business. It's all the other stuff that's been a learning experience.
And, yeah. Well, all the other stuff of business is just brutal to me.
Yeah, it is brutal.
And I keep thinking, well, I've got this person, so I don't have to think about that. And that's true for a good while. Right? Like for maybe 8 years, I don't have to think about Happy Cog at all. Greg Hoy can worry about it. And that's true. And maybe for 8 years, that's, you know, I don't mean that I'm not involved, but I mean, I really don't have to worry. There's always a point where you have to come back and go like, okay, I need to get more involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how to do it like you're doing it, but we're both doing it the way we do it.
We're doing it our way.
I want to come to Boston again and have, another meal with you at that Vietnamese or Thai place?
Yes, a Thai place. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know why I love going there so much.
Yeah, but like I know it's your favorite place. I love it there, too.
I'm sentimental about it.
I've only been there with you. That's crazy, right?
Well, you've been there with me. And then when I think like, again, like 12 years ago, Michael Nolan took you and me and Ethan Marcotte. You brought Ethan.
Yep.
He was a little boy in a hat at the time.
A little boy.
He was a little boy with a lot of dreadlocks in a hat. He was like a little white boy with dreadlocks in a hat. Remember? He was totally like a Rasta nerd. You don't remember this?
I do.
Were you guys working together at the time or just knew each other?
Yeah, it's funny. We met at South By, like the first one that we went to, I guess, even though we live in the same state or, you know, not that far from each other. And that's pretty wild, actually, to think back, you know, that far and where we all have ended up. Amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
We're running low on time. You've been most generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, I love chatting with you and I love the Big Web show. I have to catch up. I was looking at the archives and I realized how behind I am. And there's like so many cool, good, smart people that you have on there that I need to listen, you know?
You're one of our favorites. Thank you for everything.
Thanks for everyone listening out there. And
thanks, Flywheel. Thanks, Thinkful.
Yes, Thinkful. Flywheel.
Peace.
Peace out.